a new plea in the papers. Perhaps Mr. Hydright was going about it all wrong. In all the years he had worked at the bank, he had been so scrupulous in doing his duty that he had failed to make even one friend. Besides, it is difficult and not very advisable to make friends where one works. But Hydright decided one night that friends, of all things at least one, were the one thing that was lacking to a perfect rest. Mr. Hydright put an ad in the papers for a person about his age, of either sex, who would care for an elderly insomniac, go everywhere with him, talk to him all night, tell jokes, dance a little, avoid repeating themselves, buy the beer, and be quiet sometimes, at good wages, 50 a month, board and room free. There were no takers. Perhaps he shouldn't have listed the stipulations. He rewrote the urgent application and erased the stipulations. Still, no takers. If he could find one friend who would stick by him, walk into rooms with him, talk to him when others left him, he would say or do anything. He walked the streets from dusk to dawn in quest of the elusive creature, a friend. Satisfied desire and the joy of his objective, the perfect central table. He was willing to go to any lengths to produce such a creature, even to building a full life-size person who walks and talks and eats and wets. He bought nails and plastic and hammer and gauze. He was too weary to take another step. He applied to Molokai to take a leper out of the colony for as long as they both shall live, if only the leper would stay by him. No leper, however, would sign stipulations, which required him to wait at doors and follow Hydright about like a shadow. Oh, no. No doubt the worthy leper someday would find a Chiquita, and they'd go off some evening, leaving Hydright haunting the streets looking for a plague victim or a retarded child. He applied for a thalidomide baby he could raise into a friend, but was turned down. He applied to Mrs. Marina Oswald for her hand in marriage, but was refused. He joined a men's club, to no success. He went to the cemetery in hopes of finding an outcast or a grave thief he might befriend, the last of all the living, just so they wouldn't be too boring or repeat themselves, but tell jokes and dance a little and buy the beer and be quiet sometimes and praise him before others and that's all Hydright could abide them. He prepared a big banquet with lots of ham and mashed potatoes and gravy and invited all his associates from the bank. He even invited various depositors, who were quite taken aback, and said, "Who are you?" "Turkey and all the trimmings," he would say, leering and sidling up to each one in turn. And they would all say, except the bank president, "Okay." The night came, and that's all that came. Mr. Hydright sat by the window a long time waiting. He went to the back door, listened, called. In the far distance, the flock replied, "We coming." Oh, no, they weren't. Hydright finally ate the meal himself. When it was over, he put a record on the Nickelodeon and danced a couple of slow ones. Then he went up to bed, for no particular reason. Out of his high window, from time to time, he could see in the street below the man with the big hat over his eyes passing by, mumbling, "Blagados, Miss Class, 6 o'clock." Then a little later, he would see the tall nincompoop who had married the fat fanatic to organize religion, who wore a rope around her waist, wait around a church door for her to come out. He was thin as a rail, this dodo, and had been a monk himself once. He had deep-set eyes and was very nervous indeed. Then Hydright would watch from a distance the bald bachelor with a hat over his eyes coming down the street, a baggy monster with thick, unweaned lips, looking from side to side with very shifty eyes. He reached his rather forlorn-looking house, opened his door, and looked back. The house showed Hydright its dark heart. Hydright one evening went up to the fanatic's husband and asked him to come to dinner. Then he saw the girl with the limp and the scraggly hair who was always getting whipped and pushed about in school. And he asked her, too. Then he asked the baggy monster with the unweaned lips. They did not appear. Then one day they did appear, all four of them at his door. And for a little while, hope heaved the covers back, leaped up, basted turkey, piled potatoes, pitched peas. Oh, it was a merry dinner. Although the others said not a thing, but ate hurriedly, as if to get done as quickly as possible and be away. I'm certainly glad you came, he said, as they were hurrying toward the door. Won't you have a smoke? They all sat down and smoked. But it is hard to look steadily for any length of time at a fellow creature, even when you are resolved to, without thinking... never mind. Even when you make frantic efforts, setting yourself down in a chair opposite, flailing your hands to clear a path between them and you, pushing away the cottonish medium which seems always ready to intrude... never mind. Every night as I walk from one end of town to the other, I see you walking and want to strike up a conversation, said Hyde-White. They said nothing. The man in the big hat that fell over his eyes looked more than ordinarily menacing. They knew it was a lie. He suffered in silence, their silence. They finished their smoke and departed. From that time on, Mr. Hyde-White decided to resign himself and even to force others to notice it. He would sit in the bank by the hour, staring before him. And when others came into his presence, not even deigned to notice them. He laid his hand on the table, and his head on his hand, even as depositors pounded on tables. Between his head and his hand, he slipped the other hand and sat there, marble still.